Sandra Hash is a 45-year-old longtime patient of mine who was in the office several months ago for a routine physical exam when she noted on her intake questionnaire that she was having trouble with heavy periods. She's the divorced mother of two and had gone off her birth control pills a couple of years ago. Since then, she's had increasingly heavy, lengthy periods and cramps. She's not sexually active and hasn't been active for the last 2 years. She denies any other symptoms. Her periods last 8 days, with the last 2 days just spotting. All of her exam was normal except for her uterus, which was about 10 weeks size, firm and slightly irregular in contour. It wasn't tender. We have an ultrasound scanner in the office, so I scanned her pelvis and discovered a few significant findings. First, her uterus was enlarged irregularly with several measurable fibroid tumors. Two were subserosal, two were intramural, and one larger one was on the posterior wall, distorting the endometrial cavity. I also found that her endometrial stripe or lining was a little bit thicker than I expected, considering that she had just completed her period yesterday. It was about 15 millimeters. Her ovaries had a single 7-millimeter ovarian follicle, which is what I expected at this stage in her menstrual cycle. Because of the thickened lining in this 45-year-old woman with heavy periods, I performed another test called a sonohistrogram. I threaded a thin catheter into the uterine cavity, and then, while watching with ultrasound, I injected a small amount of sterile saline into the cavity. As the saline was distributing itself around the cavity, it became obvious that much of the thickened uterine lining was not really thickened endometrium, but an elongated endometrial polyp, about 1 cm by 1 cm by 3 cm in length. It was attached to the fundus on the anterior uterine wall. So this patient had two reasons for her heavy periods, uterine fibroids as well as an endometrial polyp. Based on these findings, we scheduled her for minor surgery and performed a hysteroscopy and DNC to remove the polyp. Reevaluating her several months later, her periods were much more manageable, although the cramping was still significant and her fibroids remained unchanged. When we did the hysteroscopy, we didn't attempt to resect the submucous fibroid because it was way too deep within the uterine wall and only slightly distorted the endometrial cavity. It would have been too dangerous to attempt a resection. After reevaluating her response to the removal of the benign endometrial polyp, we had to decide between simple observation of her bleeding pattern, in other words, living with the heavy flows provoked by the fibroids, versus hysterectomy, versus trying birth control pills. Each of these had their own sets of risks and benefits, but each would be a reasonable choice for the patient. She opted to try birth control pills. The birth control pills, by virtue of suppressing ovarian function, will result in an overall reduction in circulating estrogens, making it less likely that the fibroids will grow and possibly discouraging their growth. Further, by limiting the endometrial stimulation, her period should be lighter and less crampy. 3 months later, she was very happy with 3-day light periods and no cramps. She was given the option of shifting to continuous birth control pills to completely suppress menses, but she declined, and we were fine with that. So our approach to this patient with menorrhagia was to first evaluate her with a pelvic exam, ultrasound, and sonohysterography. We then proceeded to hysteroscopy and a DNC because we had an identifiable and resectable problem, the endometrial polyp, that can cause or contribute to the heavy bleeding. Had there been no polyp, then I would have performed an office endometrial biopsy to evaluate the thickened uterine lining on a microscopic level. In her case, there was no need for that since the DNC would sample the lining. We certainly could have performed a hysterectomy, and that would have been effective, but it is major surgery with the potential for major complications, and all of that for a problem that will naturally resolve at the time of menopause, on average at age 51. The patient was much more comfortable with simply taking birth control pills to control her symptoms, and as a non-smoker, this was a very acceptable choice.